Right, stable chat today. Something very different for a lot of my trotting people, but there is a trotting tone to this one, if you like. Joined firstly by Brian McKnight. Firstly, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to do a catch up with Ashley about all the amenities we've got here at Oakford Farm, but I just want to catch up a little bit of the history of this farm. It does have a significant standard bred history about it.
Yeah, it does actually. Noel Taylor originally bought the farm when it was split up from the Dennis family farm, which also belonged to part of Trevenson Park. And when the old lady, Miss Dennis, died in about 1956, 58 or something, the farm then was split up, and it was run then by people called Bob Dabb, and he eventually sold out again, and Noel Taylor purchased it, or part of it. And of course, if you remember, the trotting people will remember that Mari's Idol was stood here as a stallion, and then in 1993, I think it was, from memory, 92, Noel wasn't having a lot of success, and he decided to opt out of the farm and downsize. And coincidentally, it was put up for auction, and that was the day of the Caulfield Cup that Mannerism won. And lo and behold, we were the breeders of Mannerism. That was the first broodmare. Northwood Manor was the first broodmare Judy and I owned in partnership with Trevenson Park. So we purchased it on that day. So it has got a bit of a history going back that far. And gradually we turned it into a thoroughbred farm.
Right, I got to talk about that. We'll go about all the newer stuff with Ash, as I said, up there in a minute. There wasn't a lot here. There is a track, but there was no track when Noel was here.
No track at all. No, that was one of the things. Originally, I spoke to Noel when he was thinking of downsizing and things, and he said, "Oh, I don't know. I think I might. I've either got to build a track in the front paddock here, or I've got to sell." And I said, "Well, please don't build a trotting track in the front paddock." No? I said, "No, that wouldn't suit me at all." So that was when he decided, well, maybe the time was to put it on the market. Yeah, so that's how that happened.
It's amazing how times change. I could tell you the trotting people would be salivating at this track right now, the way it goes around and the rest. But you've got to think back to a long time ago. Your bred Mannerism, that's enormous.
Yeah. No, we as I said, the old boss, this is a bit of a history. He went for a trip to England, and he left me sort of in charge a bit at the time, and there was a mare sale in Melbourne, and I sent a message to him. I said, "There's a couple of mares I reckon we should get interested in." One was Northwood Manor, in foal to Amnator, and that produced Mannerism. And another mare, I can't remember her name now, but she produced nothing. So those were the two mares that Judy and I first, we owned 25% in those two mares. And yeah, it was a pretty good purchase, because not only Mannerism, Ladies Way was another one out of Northwood Manor. She won a Group 2 race in Sydney. So that's got us off and running in the breeding line. And that's where we've come ever since.
As a harness racing purist, I sometimes get frustrated, because this is a trotting place, and it's just beautiful. And I think credit to you and Judy. I think well done, because the place is amazing. Some of the pictures I've been able to get, and the setting, it's a lovely setting.
But it is a lovely setting, yes.
Mari's Idol was here, but also I go to Darley or Godolphin. I do their work as a horse standers as well. But that previously was owned by Barry Griffiths, who raced Mannerism.
That's right.
And that place was actually previously a trotting place as well, that was owned by the Hunters.
There you go. So that's the story. Yes, Barry Griffiths owned Northwood Manor.
Yep.
And he sold her, and we bought her, and then he purchased Mannerism back from us when we put her through the yearling sale. So unfortunately, of course, that wasn't a great result for us, because at the time She wasn't a very precocious sort of a filly. She was a light frame filly, and he purchased her back for $16,000. So it wasn't a lot of money at the yearling sale, and she turned out and she won over, well, I think about $2.6
million
in stakes, including the Caulfield Cup, of course, as well as other good group races, the Australasian Oaks and things like that she won, and that's why now they have a race named after her, the Mannerism Stakes. So, yeah, it was just great to be part of that history now, yeah.
Or Darley and Godolphin, they have a wing called the Mannerism, like it's a row of paddocks and there's a fold-down area and everything like that. So she's a great mare, isn't she? Because I think she was Damien Oliver's first Group 1 win. It was the first significant, or maybe in Melbourne, might have been.
I'm not sure on that, but it could be.
Yeah, everything about that story, apart from poor old Shane Dye and Vianna Cross, is a great story, isn't it? It's just one of those. Broodmares, we talk about broodmares, and you have a love of those, and I've got pictures of a little foal down there, but you've got quite a few mares here, you've got a few already foaled down. Pretty much where you sort of started the farm out?
Yes, so like my history goes back to, I started in this industry when I was 17, at Trevenson Park Stud then, so I spent 33 years there as, well, basically I suppose the second in command all the time until Ed, he was starting to get a bit of age on him and things like that, and unfortunately his wife died of cancer, which left a big hole in the whole production, because she was a vet herself and a very good vet, especially in the trotting field. She had a big clientele through those years there, that they used to bring the horses up to the Trevenson Park for Joe to look at and, you know, do all those sort of things with them. And then time went by, and of course, like everything that happens when people get old, they have to make a decision. And anyhow, the decision was to downsize a little bit. And by that time, my eldest son, Brendan, he had joined our team. He left school and joined our team after Joe died. And how this place originally became interested in, we had some good clientele in Singapore and Malaysia who were buying young horses, but of course they haven't got the facilities to break them in and get them going, pre-train them and things like that. So they asked us, was there any chance that we could do something like that? Anyhow, and that's what this farm was originally built for, as part of Trevertson Park, to set up a pre-training establishment. But unfortunately, that after we purchased this place, that fell through, and then so that left a bit of a hole what we were going to do. Anyhow, as I said, Trevertson was starting to downsize a little bit, so we decided as a family to branch out on our own and basically become a one-stop shop. So we a lot of clients came with us, and we had their brood mares, we raised yearlings, we go either, if they want to go yearling sales, we go yearling sales. If they wanted to go straight on into training, then we'd get them broken in, pre-train them, and then they would go to the trainer of their choice, or even if they wanted us to keep training, that's what we did. And we've always had a team of somewhere around between 12 and 15 horses in work all the time. So we now do walk-ins for people. A lot of clients always send their mares here, and then it's up to us to get them in foal and then send them home again.
It has evolved, and as I said, Ash is going to come on, but you say about your family, you've got Brendan, who works a farm, lives just around the corner as well. He's been here, and Paula, albeit in all sorts of trouble, forget Paula and Judy.
That's right, yes.
I'll get in a lot of the trouble, but it is a big family. You've got grandkids here in the background and you've had grandkids work here as well.
Yes, too right we have, and they were a very, very important part in the last few years. Brendan's two, he's got two children, a boy and a girl, Nicholas. He's a wonderful, absolute wonderful worker. And when he left school, he came here, and I think he was here for 3 years. Basically, anything you wanted to do, whether it was the horses, the farm work, whatever, that he's gone off and done an apprenticeship in diesel mechanic, and now he's got his own business, which is great. And then Rebecca, she was here for, oh no, 3, 4 or 5 years, and she was the same.
I think she ran the place better than Ash when she was here.
Yeah, I think she did.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, she was a great organiser, and then she wanted a little bit of a change as well, which was great to you know, broaden their horizon in this world of ours. And now she is working for secretary for an accountant firm in Bendigo, so that's great.
Yeah, definitely. I will throw to Ash very quickly, but you must be rapt with how the place has evolved. I mean, some of the amenities, I think you guys might take it for granted, but like, I've been coming here for a very long time, I think 25 years-ish, which is almost as long as you guys have been here. Yep, and the way it's evolved, you must be really rapt with the amenities you have now.
Oh, look, there is no doubt. We do have everything, I think, basically, that we need. We have been able to put together. One of the big, I suppose, not drawbacks, is now I've got getting a little bit of age on me. I just wish I was 20 years younger to enjoy, because now we've got what we want.
Yep.
And it's a little bit frustrating to have to slow down a little bit, because that's not in my my sort of thought pattern. I just want to keep doing what we do to try to improve all the time with our horses and things like that. But I am very lucky. Judy and I are so lucky. Ash is very, very keen on the racing side, not so much on the breeding side. He hasn't perhaps been as much as involved on the breeding side as I was. I still love the breeding side of things, trying to, I suppose, produce that group horse, like it was with Mannerism. That gives you such an absolute thrill and pleasure to be able to say, I did that, or I had that, you know, I brought that into the world. And that is just incredible feeling. Where Ash, he would rather perhaps go to sales and look and try to choose weanlings and yearlings and go from that side of things, and he's having a bit of success like that at the moment as well. So all in all, yeah, but I'm not giving up yet, so I hope I can keep going for a while.
It's one of my fondest memories when you were talking there before about Trevenza Park, and we will go very shortly to Ash, but it was nearly the last year that Ed bred I suppose as a business. And he actually won the Breeder of the Year here in Victoria against all these big studs and all the rest. And he didn't so much have no-name stallions, but lesser-known stallions and the likes. He still was the Breeder of the Year. And I remember people saying how huge an effort it is for someone at his age. So I think the breeding part, Ed's probably instilled a fair bit of that into you.
There is no doubt. There is no doubt. We did that off limited budgets. We weren't millionaires. Ed was not a millionaire. But our policy was families, broodmare families that produced winners. And as long as they produced winners, okay, the mare herself, lots of times, didn't have much of a track record, of race record, but her sisters, her brothers, as long as that family produced winners, then that was where we went. Yes, and we didn't have high profile stallions, but what we did do, we bred a lot of winners, and trainers just used to year after year after year flock back to us because they said, your horses race. And one of the great we had association with Ray Lawson, and that's what he used to say. They're tough, they're good boned horses, and that is what this country does. Look, in the summertime, people come here and say, my God, how can you run a horse farm? It can be as bare and dry and dusty, but it produces hard-boned, good, strong-boned horses. Mm. And Trevenson was like that, yes. When the Vobis scheme came in, and they used to award breeders for the stud with the most winners for their stallions, I think we won it 4 times out of the first 5 years, and we just got pipped on the fifth year. And yet, we never ever had, there was no big group one winners, but we just produced a lot of winners. And that's the trainers used to love to come and at the yearling sales. You know, every year you'd sell horses back to those people every year. They just wanted to have one of those horses because they knew they'd get, you know, race. I remember one Ray Lawson had, and she wasn't a very big filly. She had 13 starts as a two-year-old. And he said, well, why not race her? You know, she won at Moonee Valley and she won at Sandown. Yeah, and, you know, she wasn't the greatest filly on type and things like that, but she was so tough and sound.
Absolutely. I could sit here and talk to you all day about breeding. There'd be a lot of people. We haven't even touched on Murray's Idol. And did he stay in the stables that are out the back, the original stables? Was he?
Yeah, the original stables.
Yep, I've got some footage of those.
His yard out the back.
Yep.
And the little stable there. He used to live in there, yeah.
I love the fact you still got some of the history.
Yep.
This is Stable Chat brought to you by Paul Dobson and Dylan Barry. I'm actually going to cross now. We're going to relocate and set up with Ash McKnight. But thank you so much, Brian, for joining me.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you. Officially, I'm going to say wow, and I'm actually going to take one step back just so people can actually see the view. This is Oakford Farms at a different angle. Ashley, firstly, Ashley McKnight, welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
As I said there, and I would put the graphic up there too. I've got to say a big thank you to Paul Dobson and Dylan Barry, Stable Chat. They make these things available. Traditionally, they've been about harness racing horses, but there's a huge harness racing history.
Yeah.
Did you know all that history?
Yeah, I did. It was an active trotting farm back when I was a kid when we bought it. We bought it in 92, so I was about 12 when we bought it. We moved here in the early months of 97, and I was just finishing school, but probably had a bit more of a passion for the horses than going to school, but I did get through it. I did get through year 12.
You've had a few passions for a lot of things, and we could talk about those.
that could go for a long time, mate. That's good.
There's a lot of people who would know you, but we get older. We're actually at your property, or your house, overlooking the property here. It's a sensational view. You've got a lovely house as well. You've got a young family. It changes the way we do things, doesn't it? It changes the way we think about things once you start having a family and I suppose not responsibilities, but you got to perform.
Yeah, exactly. You have to give up riding motorbikes and things like that, and wasting your money and all those sort of things. So just stick to golf these days.
Back to the golf. So that's where I remember when I first started. Righto. So the farm here, it's a beautiful farm. One of the things when you first come through the main gate. You're welcomed, one, by a beautiful gate, a beautiful setting, and I've got a nice picture of that. But there's your trotting track, or your track. Sorry, it's not a trotting track.
It's not a trotting track, mate.
Okay,
come on now.
Trouble. Your track is there, and it takes up a lot of the farm, but it takes up no space at all, doesn't it? Because it's part of it. There's part of the laneways. You've got a road right alongside of it.
Yep.
It just fits in very, very well.
Yeah, it was interesting when we designed it. It took a lot of thought. We had some existing paddocks that you'll see in the front there with the mares and foals and some young horse horses, different stock. But we had to try and come up with a functional track that we could basically do everything we wanted. Now, a lot of people ask, where do we gallop and things like that? Well, I can gallop here at home and no problem at all. There is some quirks to the track and how you ride it, but I never have had an issue in 20 plus years galloping a horse on it, safe. You know, they don't break down on it. You know, it's just a natural sand track, but it's it serves its purpose, and it had to be sort of worked out, the undulation, the up and down hills, and then how the paddocks worked around that. So can't quite see it from where we are here, but there's probably about 7 or 8 paddocks inside that track of different sizes, and there's access to that from both ends. And the other thing we did, well, we thought, if in the event that we did have a bushfire or something like that, we can basically let every horse onto that track and they'll be safe.
Yeah, good fire break.
Yeah.
How big is the track?
Yeah, it's 2,100 metres around.
Oh, that's, as I said to Dad there before, there'd be a lot of trotting people who just salivate at it because of the undulations. Yep. And you know, like you said, back in 97, back then everyone was still very conventional with it. That those days have changed a lot now. So is this property. When I said, when I first came here, we had the row of 10 boxes. Actually, there was 20, both since I've been here. But there was one started off initially, but then you've got two lots of the boxes. And they're separated. And I think, I might be wrong, but I think for sort of more or less young stock and racing stock, ones at the top,
basically,
ones at the bottom, but they're a fair way apart from each other.
Yeah, so our main racing stock, they live in the bottom barn. That was the first barn built. It had an existing barn there. Now, I don't know if you ever remember it, Paul, or not, but we pulled that down prior to moving here. It was a bit dilapidated and, you know, a beautiful old barn, and we actually repurposed all the hardwood out of it into what was the original 7 boxes we built inside, which, you know, nowadays they don't get a hell of a lot of use, get more storage use than anything, and we sort of built as we grew, and it was one of those things, we sort of outgrew it before we were putting the last sheet of tin on. The horses were in.
Yep.
And then we're like, oh, well, we need another 10 and we need a round yard, so we built another 10, and then before too long it was like, well, we don't have enough room for yearling, so we had the 7 boxes, existing boxes inside back from, you know, that we renovated, and then we built another 14 boxes, so we actually have a capacity for 40 horses boxed if need be. Probably been as high as 35 or something like that, I reckon.
But they're separated because, and this is one of the things, because you are a multi-purpose and you do a lot of different things, and this is what Dad said there before, so you try to cater for basically foals
right through
to a racing stock, and trying to rehome them at the end of that and make them into a pony for people. So there's a lot of steps you have to go through to be able to do that. But the separation, it'd be a 50 metre walk down to where the racing horses are.
And yeah.
Their view, and I got a bit of footage, their view is sensational, those racing horses. It's just a lovely paddock and lovely and nice trees and nice and comfortable.
Yeah, look, they're nice big spacious boxes. They're well aired and they're very happy and content. We have most of our racehorses out in paddocks during the day as well. We like them to go out and have a pick and a play and a roll and not be cooped up. And I think you get a better attitude to most of them, especially horses come out of the city, and they take a little while to adjust to it, but they eventually sort of relax and take it in and you know, basically smell the roses.
You didn't follow me around while I was getting all my video stock, but your paddocks are two.
They
seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, we don't hesitate in doubling them up. You know, it's not something I tend to worry about too much. You mate them up pretty easily. You get a few that you might keep singly. You know, obviously you get the odd colt or whatever. You know, they get a bit boisterous, but apart from that, you know, they happily live together. They're mates. The only thing you probably ever find is that sometimes they get a bit too close to each other. They like to be mates too often, but yeah, I like them to be independent as well, so but it's good for them, go out, pick, play, you know, it's
the
good
play, the play, like I got footage of these two on camera, and they were just having a good old play, and I think that's great for them. And you know, it's a bit different, totally different lifestyle to being trained at, you know, even Bendigo, like we don't have to worry about picking on Flemingtons and Caulfields, like even the Bendigo racetrack, it's not as built up as those areas, but this is next level, relaxed, and beautiful settings, and yeah, you can see the hills behind and everything like that. Can't believe I didn't bring me drone. I cannot. There should have been drone footage. Rightio. So those amenities, everyone sort of has those. You have your tracks, your round yards. You've got actually two round yards.
Two round
and
yards,
I didn't get the picture of the initial one. It's in part of the box. I can remember your uncle riding in around that actually when I first started.
Yeah,
that
was
a long time ago. Then things have evolved. And you said about the shed, with the row of boxes inside for the yearlings and weanlings and things along those lines. Now you've got a stripping stalls, what is it, about six?
Yeah, you've got six stripping stalls. And basically it makes our life a bit easier of a morning. You have six in there at a time, whether you're saddling up, water walking, swimming, whatever you do, any vet work you got to do, shoeing, you know, you just pop them in the stalls, they're used to it, and, you know, it makes your life a lot easier and, you know, a lot more functional.
And you can see there's puddles because we've had a fair bit of rain overnight here, but you've got these stripping stalls, and that's what I was going to say. So then you've got an undercover walker, an undercover water walker, an undercover treadmill, but they're all within, I suppose, 10 metres.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, the treadmill's the newest addition. I pushed pretty hard a couple of years ago. As everyone knows, it's really difficult getting staff, and especially out here, getting people to come and ride. And I'm a big believer they need to be ridden, but most of all, they need to be worked. And the treadmill is a sensational tool. It takes a little while to learn to use it, but once you learn to use it and what its benefits are, and whether it be using incline or, you know, taking pressure off joints or whatever it might be, and it's also great for rehab. You know, it's a fantastic tool. And it's better off paying that once off than it is paying wages every year to someone. You know, it doesn't call in sick, it doesn't argue, it doesn't, you know, dispute what you ask it to do. You know, you just hit the button and away it goes.
I was told a good story about a trader a few years ago, and yeah, he named his after two staff that didn't turn up. They were both named after they had a name. Basically, they had to work a little bit harder, and that is one of the struggles. I mean, from a harness point of view, a lot of guys complain in our industry, but we're fortunate enough that we can drive them and we can continue to do them with you guys. It gets a little bit harder. You used to ride. Do you still ride?
Yeah, I still ride, Paul. Yeah, I still ride, and
the girth's a bit bigger.
My girth?
Yeah.
Yeah, my girth's a little bit bigger these days. But, yeah, back when you first met me, I was 60 kilos, ringing wet.
I'm the same, so it's all good.
But, look, now I just say it's the farrier body now. I've just turned into a farrier's body. But, look, you know, I still enjoy the riding. I don't do as much as what I used to. There's not much I'd hesitate but getting on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I rode some gallops last week and different things. And the riders that I have work with me, the jockeys, Christine Pools, Alana Kelly, are really great. That we know how to make it work when the weight discrepancy's there.
Yep.
You know, they might
have
to
give you a head start.
They give me a head start, absolutely. And then 50 to go, the milkshakes are on.
Rightio. Let's get back to what we got. The walker for a start.
Yep.
An essential tool just for basic exercise recovery.
Yep. Great warm up and recovery tool. Yeah, it definitely is. We've had that 20 years. That walker.
It's been that long.
Yeah, it's
it
one of the.
Wasn't undercover originally.
No. It we built the cover over it. So credit to my brother Brendan. He designed and built all that. It was an interesting build, that one, especially putting the iron on it. It was putting the screws in the very end were a little bit hairy, but we got there in the end. You know.
That's what younger brothers do.
Yeah, exactly.
Give them the worst job to do. And then I'm going to say 10 years, would it? The water walker be in?
Yeah, water walker's been in a bit over 10 years. It could be 2010, so you're just over 10 years, I think. Yeah. It might have been in. I reckon we put it in when I had a horse, a really good horse, Laremus, going. We put it in when he... just before he won the Dillon Stakes, I think.
Yep.
So, and because it was new, I was a little bit hesitant to change the way we trained or anything like that. It's a fantastic tool. Anybody that's ever used one or knows how they work, it's a great muscle conditioner. And it's a great post-workout tool as well. All our horses they'll work, and then they'll have 10 minutes just waiting in the water, and it's like going to the beach, I suppose. But obviously we're a long way inland from the beach. It's an excellent tool for that. It's quite deep. It's it's probably, you know, chest height when you stand in it. But the difference with our water walker to the commercial water walker is the base. So it's a concrete base, but with it's a gravel on top. And we learn about this from Peter Clark at Murchison.
Yep.
And ours was built exactly on the same specs as Peter's. And obviously he had black caviar there and it sort of made his famous, you know, when she was racing. But the gravel is what is great for tendons, joints, and the muscle conditioning, because it's a little bit like the deep sand theory, but then you add water as well.
Yep.
So it's just an amazing tool used properly. It really is.
So you use it, I suppose, one for fitness, but also just a little bit of recovery and make them pick up as well, change up.
Yeah, post-racing, you know, I've seen horses come to us from other trainers post-race, and they can do week to 10 days with us, go back one gallop, and they just fly out of their shoes. It's amazing how they go, especially horses that aren't on it all the time. It's a great tool to change your training up. And to be fair, I've had some really good results with some trotters.
Yep.
Really good results.
Yeah, Anthony Croslin.
Yeah, so his big horse, JPD, I think it was a pretty talented trotter. And he just thought he was getting a little bit, you know, lax and flat on the track, and I guess with that constant pounding work, you know, to get their fitness up and that sort of stuff, he sent him out, and he just found a new lease of life, that big horse. You know, took the pressure off him. He didn't have to work him as hard. and he just come out flying.
Yeah, he was a happy horse. I know Crossy said that. Is that something that people can do? They can touch base,
absolutely,
just a short-term stay with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We do do short-term stays on farm. It's a great way to add an asset to your training without putting in a big infrastructure. We do that. It might be a week, it might be 10 days, it might be a month, whatever the horse needs. And we can help people tailor their programs to that. Happy to answer questions to people and just say, well, what would you do with, this horse? He raced, Sunday. And be like, bring him out Monday morning. We'll give him a week. When he's bouncing around, send him back, dash him up once and race again.
Go from there. So that's key and important. Brendan, we talked about Brendan a couple of times.
Yep.
Swimming hole is sensational. And yep. I actually walked out on the gantry, and now a few of the trotting guys I know, they've got a few...
How'd you go with that? Did you get nervous at the end?
I didn't go to the end. I didn't take the step. I might have took the step down. I'm not sure if I did or I did.
Yep.
Didn't. It's impressive, but it's so safe and secure as well for people to be able to do
it. So, the design for that is interesting. I actually sort of got a... So Darren Weir was the help with the design back when he was training, and he had a swimming hole at Ballarat. He said, I'd do mine different this time. And so we took his advice. The biggest key with it is it's safe. Mm. Swimming can be a scary thing the first few times until they learn. And like people, everyone, you come along, there's always one that doesn't swim, always one. So you learn really quickly, don't swim that one. But we've never had an issue with it. It's always safe. And the thing is, it's not very far to get to dry land, but it's deep where they swim, so they can't touch the ground.
Yep.
It's probably about 14 feet deep at the deepest points. But, you only got to go about 15 feet to get to touch an edge so they can walk out
if things go
pear-shaped on you, it's really safe. Whereas if it goes pear-shaped in the conventional swimming pool sides, there's only one in and one out. And if you ever tried to drag a horse out of the water, it's not easy.
But it is safe, and
it is very safe.
Very well built. Brendan could do professional building of stuff.
He absolutely could. And his ability to see things and then build them, it's been amazing. So much stuff he's built around this farm that... you got commercial builders in, you just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Simple as that, So, it is a big credit to him and his skills in that regard.
So, McKnight Racing or Oakford Farm, what are your goals from now? Like, you've got all the amenities. There's probably still some things you probably want. There's always a want. But always a want.
Group one winner would be nice.
Yeah. So, that gets back to which way you're going. Dad alluded to there before that you're more around the buying some weanlings and yearlings and going that way. What's the direction you want to go to?
Look, I think Dad's passion's always been breeding, and he still harps on it. I think I've seen the highs and lows of breeding, and to be fair, I think there's a lot more lows in breeding than the highs. The highs are fantastic, don't get me wrong. Yeah, and racing's the same, but I have a passion for racing. It's probably my competitive nature that, like anybody, love to win. And I think you just love to see horses progress and progress into good horses at whatever level, whether that's, as Dad was talking about, whether it's break it in and pre-train it and then it goes on to be a good horse. You may have identified it young for someone and go, that sort of thing. So I like the training. It's difficult. And as you know, Paul, I'm a farrier as well. So I quite like the farry. I don't know whether my body likes it that much, but I have backed off a lot these days. But I probably, in that regard, I really like the problem cases rehabilitation side, which fits in with the farm as well. So I have got aspirations. We can't see it here on camera, but I have a workshop here at home that I'm currently just finishing up building where people can bring their horses in to me, get assessed. You can work with vets, you can, body workers, whatever it is. I'm always happy to work with people and get the right outcome for people, whether it be racehorse, performance horse, pony, whatever it may, right down to miniatures, even still trim a few miniatures, they've all got hooves, they've all got their issues, and you know, you just want the best for them, you know. And I suppose too, you touched on the trading. So I do a fair bit of bloodstock work, which I've sort of got into, whether it be advising people or even just doing, you know, what we call pin hooking.
Yep.
For the farm. I'm sure everyone knows what pin hooking is out there. You know, basically, yeah, you buy and trade. And so I've had a bit of success with, you know, pin hooking weanlings. It's a tough game. I didn't buy any this year because the market was really strong, and you have to be able to assess what you can get out of them. But you know, I've had a couple of horses that have done well. A good little story. I bought a filly in Queensland by Zoostar. Now, I know we've Paul's heard this story, but I sent it home to Dad from Queensland. It got home I sent him a photo, and he said to me, "Has that horse got a parrot mouth?" And I've gone, better let me check that. But she had a few little issues I was prepared to forgive. Anyway, we put some love and care into her parrot mouth. That's never bothered her in her life. And we actually sold her in the Melbourne sales. I paid $7,500 for it. And when I did, I thought, I've really missed something, because it should have made a lot more. I was prepared to pay a lot more. And anyway, she's a horse called Kenyan Wonder, and Ryan Balfour trained her in South Australia, and she's won about 250,000, that horse.
Seriously?
Yeah, so I say to people, mates and that ask me about it, they say, what's your process? I say, I probably buy horses that I think can run. Not necessarily the horse that's going to make you $1 million as the trade. I want to sell horses to people that can run.
Yep.
And make them good money. And that goes back to Dad's original theory that you buy
winning families.
Yeah. If a mare keeps producing winners, then you are a really good chance of getting a winner.
It's one of those things. I'm a horse dentist as well, but Trevins and Park and here as well, they have a feel as soon as you come onto the place. And sometimes you can't make those feels, if that makes sense. But Trevins and Park always had a feel, but it just, I reckon, always overachieved. I think when I started coming here, I'm like, oh yeah, they're a good breeder. But when you look back at it now, they're able to overachieve. And pretty simple philosophies that Dad alluded to there before about just following the right families and keeping those families going and ticking along.
Yeah, look, I think you can get caught up in the Nicks and the Crosses and the Triple A's and the, you know, the Double A's. And look, some people will, make a living out of that sort of thing. It probably doesn't get me jumping up and down that much. I do listen to it and are prepared to try people's theories and that sort of stuff. You can't get past good horsemanship. You can't get past picking a horse with type, picking a horse with something you like, whether it be a walk, a hind quarter, a forearm, a Gascon, and even guys that just love a kind eye, or they love a big jowl. You know, whatever your go-to is, as long as you keep putting the runs on the board, that's okay.
Yeah, it works. Talk to you all day. Haven't got all day, but we could talk to you.
We need to do some work today, Paul.
Unfortunately, he wants me to go and do horse's teeth. I can't believe he's doing that too.
Yeah, someone wants me to shoe some too.
If people want to get in touch with you, best way to get in touch with you or Dad?
Look, just generally our mobiles. They're easily found, either on the web. You can also contact us through our Facebook pages, whether it be Oakford Thoroughbred Farm or McKnight Racing. Easy to get in contact with. Our numbers are there. Easy to find. Happy to have a chat if you've got questions. And, we just love the horse. And we love seeing it succeed, and we love seeing people succeed. Obviously you'd love to have a stable full of Group 1 horses, but that doesn't always happen. But we'll just keep doing our best. And hopefully the next win is just around the corner.
As I said, this is Stable Chat, brought to you by Paul Dillon and Paul Dobson and Dylan Barry. I get them mixed up all the time. Dobbo's going to be like, I'll kill him. But I must say very much thank you to them guys. Thank you to yourself. Thank you to Dad. Mum was there as well. I think everything that you guys are doing here is terrific. Brendan didn't come because he's too busy working, but that's okay.
Yeah, he's too busy chasing sheep around.
He likes his sheep. Yeah. But I appreciate it. Outside of COVID times, people are welcome to come in.
Absolutely. Yep. Always welcome with a smile and a cuppa, and you can come out. If you've got horses here, we love people to come out and see their horses, and you know, even just want to come see our amenities and check it all out. You know, a lot of people probably don't realise what's actually here, but as Dad said, we're the one-stop shop.
Yep, definitely. Thank you very much, Ash.
Cheers, Paul.